This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
Hi there, and I'm Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 21st, episode 831. This episode is brought to you by Revitavet, the leader in preventative maintenance and rehab using state-of-the-art infrared therapy. Visit Revitavet, Revitavet.com. Good morning, Horse World.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Misfit by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
How do I get this?
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, that's right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our first training episode here with Christy from the Certified Horsemanship Association. Welcome to the show, Christy.
Thank you, Glenn. We're excited to be here. I love that opening, by the way.
Yeah, this is your first time hearing it. Jennifer does a good job with the openers. I think you probably heard a little bit of sound from your website in there, too.
I did.
Well, this is going to be fun. We are looking forward to having you aboard this year. Christy is going to be joining us on the third Tuesday of every month with a special training episode of Horses in the Morning, where we talk all about training horses and training people. And I can't think of anybody better to do it with than Christy, who I've known for many years. And we just thought, you know, who could come on and really provide a wealth of different trainers and a wealth of knowledge? And Christy, couldn't think of anybody better, and I'm so glad that you've agreed to do this.
Thanks, Lynn. We're really excited about it. You know, we have, gosh, a lot of us down here in the U.S., and we're growing up in Canada, too, so we're going to have one of each later on the show today, so that'll be fun.
Well, terrific, and, you know, we're going to have a lot of different guests with a lot of different tips and different things that you can do at home. We really want this to be kind of a practical episode, more than some of our other episodes, which are pretty silly at times. So we're going to combine silly and practical and hope that everybody learns something on the third Tuesday of every month. That might be the only episode all month that people learn something, but it's going to happen.
I actually wanted to put something in here. We have a motto at CHA, and our motto is safe, effective, and fun. So there's no CHA way to teach a riding lesson. You just need to be safe, effective, and fun. And remember what you told me when I first talked to you about the show?
I probably said entertainment first, education second.
You did. You went, well, Christy, this is what I think that you need to do when we're on the show. And I said, what, Glenn? And you go, you need to be fun, effective, and safe. Yes, sir.
We always
have warned our guests.
We always put fun first. That's our job. We are here to entertain. Jennifer, what is coming up on today's the first of the training episodes?
On today's Certified Horseman, I can't say the word horseman. Certified Horseman Association Training Tuesday. It's all about keeping it fresh, new, interesting, and productive. The kind of fresh we want, not the kind of fresh as in we'll wash your mouth out with soap. And we'll start out with a great in the Great Northwest with Tara Gamble for those that have a Western heart. And then we'll move a skosh south to some warmer climes for a visit with Tara Cackert from California for some great stuff of the English persuasion. So stay tuned for the training frenzy, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, Christy, let's first, before we get into the CHA and finding a little bit about out about that, and I know we've had you on some of the other shows in the past, but it's been a long time, actually. Let's find out a little bit about you. So what's your history with horses, and when did you start with them?
Well, a long time ago, Glenn, I was actually a stable wench.
Yeah. What weren't about three quarters of the audience? They all were.
I actually worked for medieval times.
Oh, you really were a wench.
I really was.
Oh, see, I thought you were just being sarcastic. No, you really were a wench.
Nope. Yes, actually, on my pay stub. Yes, that's what it said on my pay stub. It said stable wench down in the memo for my paycheck. Uh-huh.
Which medieval times did you work at?
Buena Park in Southern California.
Oh, okay. That's one of the very few we haven't been to. Jennifer and I have been to several of them. So were you one of the server people?
I was not. I was lucky enough to be backstage with the horses. That's why I was a stable wench. I got to be in the stable.
Oh,
I groomed
cool.
and saddled and led the Andalusian stallions down to their official job and then led the good old quarter horses, Morgans, and other breeds down later on for the games, and then I put them all away in the evening and fed them.
For the couple people that don't know what medieval times is, it's a dinner theater. It's set in a stadium. You eat with your fingers, and you watch knights come out and challenge each other and do fun things and do battle, and plus they have some different exhibition type of things that they do with the Andalusians. Tell everybody, there's an interesting story. Are those all homebred?
You know, actually, yes, they have a huge breeding farm in Texas, right outside of Dallas, and I think it's even open to the public on certain days if you wanted to look it up on their website and check it out, but they do. They go ahead and breed those Andalusians. They brought them in originally back from Europe, way back when they first started medieval times, but yes, now they breed them themselves.
Now, I do know we went backstage. We haven't been backstage in medieval times yet, but the people at Arabian Nights had us down for a couple of different shows, and we got to go backstage and see what happens. It's a very busy place back there during shows, doing the turnarounds, getting the various nights out, getting clothing changes done for the horses and the people. Is it as nuts at medieval times that way?
You know, it certainly can be. And I think one of the reasons, Glenn and Jennifer, why I ended up doing what I do for Certified Horsemanship Association is even when I was 16, I was teaching people how to ride on a little POA I had named Popcorn. And people would come and I would, you know, charge them $10 and they would be all family friends. And I started realizing that there was really a lack of education. I was one time, there was kind of a, if you go to medieval times, there's an area where people kind of buy trinkets and gifts and things like that. And that's where all the horse stalls face behind glass so that people can see the horses. So I go in to get Lippy. Right above his stall door, it says Lippy, L-I-P-P-Y. He's gray, he's fat, he's short, right? And I go in to get him because he's going to be part of the pre-show. So I'm putting a bridle on Lippy and I'm doing all this stuff. And this gal and this guy come up to me and the girl goes, "Honey," to her boyfriend, "that is an Arabian. Isn't it a beautiful Arabian?" And I'm thinking, no, it's a Lipizzaner. That's why its name is Lippy, and it's short, fat, and white. But I'm not going to say a word because it has a Roman nose, not a dish face. But I'm not going to say a word. I'm like, no, I'll just sit there and, you know, go along. So pretty soon he's like, "No, honey, I don't think so. I think it's a Lipizzaner." She's like, "No, dear, it's definitely an Arabian. Go ask the little girl. Little girl." And I went, uh-oh, here we go. And I go, uh-huh. She goes, "What is it?" I go, "It's a Lipizzaner. That's why it's named Lippy." And I took it out of the stall and took it down. And, you know, not even half an hour later, here comes my boss. "You know, some girl complained about you. As a stable wench, you're not supposed to talk." Yes, sir. Oh, my.
That's
and
funny.
It's been education ever since.
Yeah, she was just mad. Her boyfriend was right. That's
the boyfriend did not. Yeah, the boyfriend made a big mistake. Those two did not last.
No, and believe me, you didn't want to be with her anyway. So, good riddance. But you know, I think a lot of people have that. A lot of people that don't know anything about horses think they're all Arabians, you know, or they're all thoroughbreds. Whatever breed they've heard of first is what they all are. you know?
True.
Well, you know, in defense of those who have no equine knowledge, unlike dog breeds and even cat breeds, there are not obvious distinctive differences to the average Joe. You can tell a collie from a Great Dane from 100 yards away with one eye.
Yeah, that's true.
But in the horse world, it's subtle even to some experts. Can you imagine those who have no knowledge? But on the flip side of that, that's what makes dealing with horses in the 21st century potentially hazardous to so many people, because there are so many things about an equine that are extremely subtle, and many of them have to do with your own personal safety and that of your horse. Eh?
Yep. True. That's right.
That was good, by the way, Jennifer, to put safety in there. Good job.
I'm working with those words. I wrote them down.
That's good. And that's a great segue into, you know, more information about CHA.
There you go. Go for it.
Well, so you had asked a little bit about my background. So the medieval time thing and then the teaching thing. So I've been a teacher for a really long time, but to be honest with you, pretty much always on the side. And then I started doing it 40, 50 hours a week, and I realized, oh, my goodness, this is hard work to teach 40, 50 hours a week out in the arena, out on the trail, in the round pen, whatever the case may be. And I found, unlike some people, I think that my love is people and training the person more than it is training the horse. I'm such an extrovert that I find it harder to just be with the horse the whole time, though I love being with the horse, but I think I'd rather train the person. And I think a lot of times you're good at one or the other. It's sometimes challenging to be good at both. And there's a lot of people within our organization that are good at both. They can train the person and the horse, and I say kudos to them. I really enjoy that.
You're right about that, though, because even in the professional riders that we've talked to and that we know really well, you know, they'll admit to you that they're good at one or the other, or better at one or the other.
Yes. So we've been asked a lot, as far as CHA goes, whether we train the instructor or whether we train the horse. And we have a certification program for people that are teaching the rider. And I think our reason for that is that there's only about 100 ways to teach posting trot. There's probably 5,000 ways to start a horse.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, from that perspective, we do train the people who teach the rider, but quite honestly, most of our riders end up buying their own horses, don't they? Or leasing a horse or whatever. And so we also, of course, have to do some horse training too. So we end up doing both, which is fun.
How long have you been with the CHA?
I was with them. I got certified with them actually in 99. And my dear friend, Julie Goodnight, who I know has been on your show before, she actually certified me. She was one of our master instructors and still is. And did that, and I got hooked. I really enjoyed the process, which I'll get into here in a little bit. I enjoyed the camaraderie with the other people that were getting certified that same week with me. And I just kind of told her, I go, hey, Julie, if there's ever a job that opens up, I would love to come and work for the organization. And I had worked for the Arabian Horse Association for a while in their youth department, and I put on a judging competition and some other things. I had worked with an at-risk barn called the Urban Farm for a little while, and of course I had been teaching lessons. And so she went ahead and told me about a part-time opening for marketing, and my background and education is in marketing, so I thought, well, good, this is what I'll do. And so I enjoyed that, and then I became their CEO thereafter. So I've been with them now, gosh, I think 10 years, Glenn. It's been a while.
Wow, that's terrific. I didn't realize that Julie was the one that got you started.
It was Julie.
Huh. I didn't realize that she had been with it for that long, actually. I knew that she was involved, but I didn't know for that long. Who you know, this may sound like a dumb question, but who are the members of the CHA? You know, who are the people that you are training? Are they English? Are they Western? Are they discipline specific? Or is it just everybody?
You know, Glenn, your question is great. And if my boss, who's always the current president, is listening, he'll be thrilled. His name is Ward Stutz, and he's with American Quarter Horse Association.
Okay.
He's our volunteer leader right now. But he did this at our last strategic planning meeting. He sat us down, and he said, all right, why do we exist, and who are we? And I think that those are perfect questions. And so the who that we came up with during that time is we're an eclectic bunch. We are all breed, all discipline. We even certify vaulting instructors. We certify drivers. We certify equine facility managers. We certify trail guides that pack out into the wilderness overnight for 5 days, which is not something I personally want to do.
Me either. That involves camping.
In a tent on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No showers. I'm not there.
Ditto. And then, of course, most of who we teach is the standard English Western person who teaches, you know, basic seat, basic safety. So that's who we are.
Now, what training do the instructors that get the certification go through? What do they have to do to get certified?
We do week-long clinics, which we think is great because it's very hands-on that way and very practical. So we have host sites around the U.S. and Canada. And anyone listening, if you have a facility that where you have school horses, you have an arena, either indoor or outdoor, and you have good tack, both English and Western, or you can do a single seat clinic as well, but we like the double ones. We like exposing people to both if they haven't already been. But they're week-long. There's a written test involved, which scares people, but don't stress out. It's not that bad. And then we go into actual teaching lessons to each other the entire week, and we role-play for one another as whatever age the person who's teaching the lesson wants us to be. And, boy, you can tell a lot when somebody role-plays as a 12-year-old that's never ridden before if they actually have ever taught a 12-year-old that's never ridden before.
That's going to be interesting. And what does the certification do for the instructor? What advantage does it have to go through this?
You know, I went through that exact same process thought-wise when I got certified. I had hung my shingle and called myself a teacher, and I had shown locally, regionally, and nationally. So I felt like, oh, this is fine. This is what I'm going to do. And you know what? I think that's absolutely right. For some instructors, that is definitely the way to go. I think getting certified, though, gives you that next step of saying, look, I went out on a limb and I tested myself. I went out on a limb and tested myself against the standard in the industry for professionalism and to make myself different than Joe down the street that might not have done that. Main reason I did it, though, was for insurance. It was all about the money for me, Glenn. I just wanted cheaper insurance, and professional liability insurance will go down with most carriers when you get insured by us.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. And I just noticed something. I had to laugh here, Christy. I just noticed something on your website. If you can just search for Certified Horsemanship Association and the website will come up. But I had to laugh because one of your sponsors is Paint Horse Wines. And I figured that's what they do when they flunk the certification. That's
that could very well be. Or midweek when they're trying to get through it, one or the other.
Or celebrate if they actually. Either way, the Paint Horse Wines is perfect. You know, any which way it is. I just gave them a plug. I had no idea there was a Paint Horse Winery, by the way, in Sonoma Valley.
That's fun.
So, we need a wine sponsor, Jennifer. We need to find a wine sponsor.
Let's go for it.
We don't have a wine sponsor.
I'm all on. We need a wine sponsor. There's plenty of wineries in California. I'm sure we can find one.
Yes.
I don't know, you guys. You guys do this radio show so early and live in the morning. You might need somebody that does champagne so we can have mimosas.
Either that or we need a coffee
sponsor.
There
we go. Coffee sponsor. Yeah. Maybe a coffee sponsor would be more appropriate.
Hey, what's the CHA manual? I see that on the homepage here, too.
Yes, when somebody attends a clinic, they actually receive our manuals, but we honestly say you don't need to crack them prior to coming because it really is the knowledge that you come with that we're certifying, not the newfound knowledge that you might gain that week or find out of the books. But it's a composite manual of horsemanship, levels 1 through 4, and we've basically divvied up how to ride into 4 levels. So if you're teaching somebody to level 1, you're teaching them how to stop, start, steer, mount, dismount, and walk trot, and walk jog. And if you're teaching at a level 2, now we've moved into beginning lope, beginning canter, some more movements at trot like serpentines, figure eight, things like that. And then at level 3, we're now starting to do simple lead changes. We're starting to maybe jump a little. We're starting to maybe do horsemanship patterns and trail type things in the arena, obstacles. And then at level 4, now we're getting pretty serious about the flying lead changes. You're getting pretty discipline specific. you might be going down the road more of reining or dressage or whatever the case may be. So that's kind of how we divvy it up.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about you're teaching the teachers, and I used to be an instructor helping salesmen learn to be better salesmen. I used to teach sales, and it's amazing when I started watching Jennifer teaching how much correlates no matter what you're doing. I can see why you can teach all disciplines, because teaching is teaching. Yes, you may be teaching a lope instead of a trot, but it's still teaching, and the fundamentals are still all the same when it comes to teaching. And I don't care what you're teaching. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're teaching riding or you're teaching somebody how to sell something. Those fundamentals are, because we're dealing with people, and people are people, you know, and they have the same issues no matter what you're teaching them.
You are absolutely right. And I'll tell you something, those people that come to get certified that have been school teachers in the past or are currently school teachers, wow, can they normally knock us out of the park. Because they have an organized lesson plan. It's like a speech. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? It has transitions in between. They can catch things on people. They just really can explain a concept in 5 or 6 different ways if somebody's not getting it. I mean, they're just really, really good.
Well, and they recognize quicker, I think, because they've dealt with so many kids. They've just had a lot of practice. They recognize quicker what kind of learner that people are, too. You know, some people are visual, some people are not. You know, and I think they have the ability to recognize what kind of learner people are. And isn't that a real key to a good teacher, you know, and a good instructor?
Oh, without a doubt. We actually have... When the two clinicians certify the people during the week, they're put on the spot too. We actually have to do 4 different lectures, and one of those is teaching techniques. And in there, we do talk about, let's take, for example, first canter. You have to be able to teach it visually, kinesthetically, and auditorily. And what is the riding lesson most of the time? It's all about listening, right? It's all auditory. You sit, stand up there in the middle of the arena, and you tell people to do stuff, right? But visually, you've got to get on as the instructor and show first canter. Or you better have an advanced student show first canter, or you better go ahead and put, you know, cantering on a video prior so that people can see what that canter movement looks like, see what somebody's body's doing while they canter, because those visual learners have to have that. And then, of course, kinesthetically is doing it, which is all what we do, too, when you're up on a horse.
Yeah, I have to be able to see it. I tried doing lessons with Jennifer. That never works, by the way, the husband-wife thing. Very, very seldom does that ever work. She made me go somewhere else. But you know, I need to see it. I really do need to see it, and then I can replicate it better than just hearing somebody tell me how to do it. That doesn't work with my mind.
Yes, having a demo is super. Some sort of a demo, even if it's on the ground and getting, you know, if you have a group lesson with a bunch of kids, they love skipping. Showing them on lead changes by skipping, right, from their right leg forward to their left leg forward, and then explaining, but now you got 4 feet on the ground, and some of them will put their hands on the ground too, and they'll try to do it. It's wonderful.
Now, what you guys also do conferences. I know that you had one here recently when we still lived in Lexington. You had your big national conference. Tell us about that.
Yes, we do those every fall. And Glenn and Jennifer, they're open to everyone. So anyone that wants to come, you do not have to be an instructor. You don't even have to be somebody that wants to be an instructor. It's just general horse information. You just love horses, come and join us. We do every third year in Lexington, Kentucky, because that's actually where CHA is based, is right next to the horse park. So we do every third year there. But then the rest of the time, we actually go around the country. We were in Oregon a couple of years ago. We were in Buffalo, New York just last year. And we always tie in actual horses with the conference. So if anyone wants to attend, it's not just sitting in a hotel and listening to lectures, which, of course, is part of it, but it's actually getting on the horses and riding. So we always provide great school horses, great tack, and a great opportunity to come and learn kinesthetically while you're up on top of the horse. So it's been a really, really fun thing to do. I've coordinated them now for 9 years, and I've really enjoyed doing it.
Now, where's this year? So is it always in Lexington?
No, every third year in Lexington. So we're in Lexington this year. Next year, we're going to be in Amarillo, Texas. So we travel around.
All right. Then one other question for you. What do you hope to do with this episode every month? What do you hope to accomplish for the listeners?
You know, Glenn, I was very excited when you asked us to do this because I did think our big thing and what we do well and what we would love to share with other people with our 4,000-plus members is, just like you said, tips that they can do and take home and try and different ideas to do the same thing because there's, like we had talked about earlier, there's not just one way to do something. There's many ways to do something safely, effectively, and have fun while doing it. So why not go ahead and have different instructors with different perspectives, different backgrounds? You know, they aren't all stable wenches like me, Glenn. So they all have different backgrounds. And take their knowledge and their background and put it to use.
Well, you know, I played a king, so I got to say I was a little higher up the hierarchy. But it is funny that we both did that kind of thing. Jennifer, you know, I posted a picture of me playing the king. We owned an acting company. We did medieval feasts. And we also worked at Renaissance fairs. And I posted a picture of me playing the king here a week or two ago. And it was funny, the comments. And one of them was, I hope Jennifer was your queen. She hated playing the queen. She much preferred playing a wench. She said it was just a lot more fun playing a wench than the queen. So there you go. No shame in that.
Way more fun, huh?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Queen was too stuffy for her. Now, what if somebody, before we go to your first guest here today, if somebody wanted to get involved and to learn more about, you know, how to become a certified instructor, what do they do? What are the steps?
Yes, one of the best things to do if they've never taught before is you can go to our website, which is chainstructors.com, and it's actually our current online database in real time. So as we update memberships, emails, phone numbers, that gets updated. People can go in and put their own bios and photos up, the instructors themselves, and it'll tell you what they're certified in, what discipline they're certified in, English or Western. It'll go ahead and tell if they have some of those adjunct certifications we talked about, like vaulting and what have you, and then it'll give you the level and call them up. Call one near you and see if you can shadow. Most of our instructors love that. Go out and assist and teach with them. Go out and help them learn those kinds of skills. And then when you go to your certification clinic yourself, you'll be a little bit more prepared. And then you can find the clinics on our website by date or location. I don't always recommend just going to a place near you. You know, we do have occasional clinics in Maui, Hawaii. I would much rather go there.
There you go, Jennifer. You need to take that
cold
one.
Colorado.
I like that. Yeah, yeah. I see that.
Make it a vacation.
It's a tax write-off. That's business, man.
True.
Well, this is great. Let's take a break for your title sponsor for the day, which is RevitaVet, and find out a little bit about them. And then we're going to come back with your first guest. Tara Gamble is going to join us, and she is from Tara Gamble Horsemanship. We would like to welcome RevitaVet as a sponsor of the training episode brought to you by the CHA. RevitaVet is the number one name in your horse's preventative maintenance and rehab using state-of-the-art infrared therapy. RevitaVet's IR2 does many things to help your horses, including promoting healing by more than 50%, reducing inflammation and relieving pain, stimulating acupressure points, and raising performance levels without medication. All of that leads to a healthier, happier horse and less medical bills, and that is something that we all look for. And now they have a free RevitaVet app that you can use in conjunction with the RevitaVet IR2 to make your life easier, enabling you to select and customize therapies for some of the 76 most common injuries or conditions, including abscesses to wounds and everything in between. Riders that are using RevitaVet IR2 include eventers Philip Dutton, Buck Davidson, Gina Miles, barrel racer Sherry Sturdy, and our own shooting champion Tammy Serrant. Learn more about infrared light therapy and the IR2 at their website at RevitaVet.com. That's RevitaVet.com. Your horse will thank you for it. Well, Christy, why don't you introduce our first guest?
I would love to, Glenn. This is Tara Gamble, and she is from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. She actually has an interesting past, much like I was talking about me working for Medieval Times. She was Miss Rodeo Canada runner-up. She has also been the president of the Certified Horsemanship Association and the Alberta Equestrian Federation, and is currently on the board for Equine Canada. She does all kinds of disciplines and breeds at her barn at Tara Gamble Horsemanship there in Edmonton. And today she's going to be chatting with us about some Western horsemanship and reining exercises.
Good morning, Tara.
Hello, Tara. How are you?
Oh, good morning, everyone. Thanks so much for that introduction. And it's great to be here. And thanks for getting me in out of the cold. I appreciate it.
It's not every day we have a rodeo queen on, so you're more than welcome.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Glenn. It's a great honor to be here.
We were talking about how I used to be a stable wench, so I said, well, there are others coming up on the show that have, I think, probably more exciting past than me.
Oh, no, that's great fun, and you know, what's really neat is it's in the past, so
yeah,
we're moving forward. It's all good.
Well, I was telling Glenn that you sent me a fabulous list of all kinds of different things to chat about today, and I think we just have so many choices of where to get started that I just want to kind of jump right in and get started with a few of these tips for people. We had talked about earlier on the show, Tara, that one of the main reasons for this segment of Horses in the Morning is going to be so that people can go immediately, and whether or not they teach or whether or not they own a horse or whether or not they take lessons on a school horse, they can go and maybe share some of these activities that we're going to chat about and make themselves better riders.
Absolutely, Christy, I agree, and I think I fully support that. There's all kinds of exercises you can do for regardless of age, skill level, discipline, and that's so really, really neat thing about horses is that we're able to do that with them, you know, and we can improve our own fitness as well as our horse's fitness.
Absolutely, because I know, you know, it's kind of like exercising. I know that there's all kinds of things out there right now, like Pilates for horsemen and yoga for horse people and all those kinds of things. And wouldn't you agree that if we keep ourselves strong off the horse, we can be strong on top too?
Absolutely. And, you know, just personally to share with you, I've actually incorporated some yoga into my exercise, and I've noticed a huge difference in terms of my flexibility. As we indicated, the rodeo queen was quite a while ago. So I'm trying to sort of get back to somewhat of that statue, but, you know, being able to do that has definitely improved my core strength, which has made me a better rider on top of the horse. And I'm sure my horse appreciates it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because like you had put, you know, an increased partnership for both horse and rider. Absolutely. Because doing these exercises is for both.
Yeah, and there's a really good opportunity to advance, you know, the horse and the rider in their abilities. And what I think is a really neat opportunity, and I thought I'd just jump right in and say, it's also a really great opportunity to learn how to improve the use of our aids. And as riders, that's something we're always trying to do. And, you know, our natural aids being our voice, our hands, our legs, and our feet, we always are trying to get independent control of that. And when a rider is beginning, sometimes they have trouble separating the use of those aids. So, you know, quite often the horse may be a little bit confused or you may not get the response you want. As we continue to grow in our riding, right, we're always trying to get a lighter, softer, more responsive horse. And that comes with us being able to, you know, use our aids better and more effectively. So that just comes with practice. And exercises are a great way to do that.
So, Tara, could we just jump right in here and go ahead and start with some of these exercises so folks listening can maybe this afternoon, you know, when they get off work or if they're listening in the middle of the night, when they wake up in the morning or whenever they're listening, they can go ahead and do some of them. What are some different stretches that they can do while they're up on the horse? And are those stretches just with their arms or can they do them with their legs too?
Oh, great question, Christy. Yeah, I'm really enjoying doing this for riders of all levels, all ages. It's very, very good for you and your horse. And just some simple stretches would include things like catching the horse between the ears on the pole. And so you're reaching forward and you can go ahead and reach behind and touch the horse on the dock. It is a good idea that your horse, you know, may be used to you touching those areas before you actually do it while mounted. So it's a good idea to, you know, when you're grooming, make sure you're touching your horse all over. It just helps in desensitizing your horse to those areas. You don't want a surprise when you're on
and
top.
And if they're not, it's why we recommend helmets. Just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. On the UC, you know, if you have, you know, eyes on the ground, that's always a really good thing. It's helpful to have someone there too. But yeah, absolutely, Glenn. Great point. So, you know, those are some of the simple ones you can do. You can touch the shoulders. You can touch the horse's hips as well. And, you know, reach across. So, for example, it would be left arm to right side of the horse and vice versa. But then, you know, moving down through your core, you know, you can do some shoulder shrugs, loosen tension. A lot of times shoulders are an area that we carry our tension in. And then moving down through your body, you could have the rider do pointing and flexing, you know, with their feet, some ankle circles. I even at times will have my riders remove their feet from the stirrups and do a scissor stretch where one foot is pointing towards the horse's head and then the other one is back, so that they, and then switch legs and sort of allow.
Question.
Yeah,
Tara, for people who have perhaps not been exposed to these types of exercises aboard a horse, because you frequently see them initially performed while the horse is being controlled by someone on the ground, for example, lunging. Are these
right.
exercises, is the goal that you simply touch the horse's ears in any way, shape, or form you can without getting dumped? Or are these exercises designed so that you can get your left hand to touch the horse's pole while the remainder of your body has a desirable position? For example, when you do yoga, if you touch your toes, you don't touch your toes by bending your knees. You touch your toes by keeping your legs straight. Tell us a little bit about what the goal of the exercises overall is.
Great question, Jennifer. And yes, when you're starting primarily, you may not be comfortable with trying to get a correct position. And not that you're not trying to get dumped. It's just more you're trying to improve your comfort zone. So for a person who's maybe having a first or second experience on a horse, this would be something just to get them comfortable with reaching. But as you progress and you're a more advanced rider, definitely you could be working on position and really trying to improve your core strength, your position, because that really, really helps and translates through to the horse, because any tension as riders that we carry will transfer through to the horse, and then you get that same sort of response in your horse. So excellent question, but yeah.
What might be some common challenges for perhaps a rider who's gone through the bare bones basics and can comfortably walk and steer and perhaps trot a bit on their horse? Are there particular parts of the body or particular areas that you find, we'll just use touching the ears and touching the dock as an example, but I'm sure they're different within each exercise. Is it hard for people to remain straight on the horse? Is it harder for them to keep their leg position? What are some common challenges that you see in a lot of riders when they first learn to do that type of exercise?
Yeah, common challenges would be, first of all, sometimes if they're used to riding with two hands, then switching to one hand in order to be able to perform the exercise, that in itself takes a little bit of practice, but it's very good skill, because there's lots of riders that neck rein and ride with one hand, but if you're not used to that in your direct training, it is a little challenge, first of all, to do that. Second of all,
it's amazing how hard it is to not look.
You want to look down and watch what you're doing. Yeah, and look down. You know, and then the other challenge would be individual, because some people's range of flexibility isn't as great as others. So depending on where you're at, you know, you may only be able to get halfway up the horse's neck, where others come, I've seen others
really
come right
horse.
Up. That's right. Yes.
Short
bike is
short.
Ride.
Be an advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's right. So, yeah, I mean,
I think it's so true, Jennifer and Tara. I think it's so true that, you know, your core is your core. Your basic seat is your basic seat. So no matter what I make your hands do, you still have to have your plumb line, heel, elbow, hip, ear. You still have to go ahead and stay centered in the middle of the saddle. But now we're going to go ahead and do some things, because, Tara, wouldn't you agree, if you're trying to reach the ears, that might be like going up a little hill, right? Because you've got to put your center of gravity forward a little bit. If you're reaching around and touching the dock, of course, you don't want to be twisted when you're going down the hill, but that feeling of tucking underneath yourself might be going, you know, down a hill. So things like that, I think, are helpful too with these exercises, if you can relate them to real life.
Yes, and apply them to the situation. Absolutely. I also know that some riders, you know, are so comfortable, they'll stand right up in their stirrups and reach right forward, where others are a little tentative. So, I mean, it's great for balance exercise as well. You know, we do a lot of times in English riding, talk about the 2-point or in Western a standing trot. You could add another little depth of element to that and have the rider drop their stirrups, you know, so they're really having to use themselves to lift up.
As a real-world situation, a lot of people think these exercises are only for people who are going to ride in horse shows and arenas and things. Who among us has not had to, for some reason or another, suddenly duck and smoosh our face down into our horse's mane to avoid being beheaded by a limb or something like that? And these exercises, subconsciously at the very least, prepare your body for those kinds of situations.
I had a turkey attack one day. I had to do some ducking. Turkey came out of a tree above us and attacked us. So, see, there could be any reason you'd have to do this.
A turkey attacking you, Glenn. There's so many stories there, I don't even know where to go.
Yes. And the amazing part...
ostriches attacking you, but not turkey.
The amazing part is I actually stayed on the horse, and I don't ride very often. I'm a driver. So I actually stayed on the horse and didn't die. That's the amazing part right there. Jacked by a
turkey. Good core strength, Glenn. You could benefit to some exercises on horseback.
I'd like to say that, Tara. I think it was dumb luck. I didn't fall off the horse. I think that's pretty much what it was. There's a reason that I drive. I don't have to worry about all that core strength stuff. We just sit there. Just kidding.
Well, if we could go ahead now, Tara, I want to go ahead. You just gave us some simple stretches for the rider and some things to do. Could we go ahead now and translate that down to the horse and do some simple stretches for the horse, whether you're on a school horse, your own horse, a friend's horse? What are some things that can get your horse ready to go out and conquer that trail ride or whatever your plan is for that day?
Yeah, great question, Christy. I do like to do simple stretches on my horse no matter what I'm doing. So whether we're going to be riding in the arena, going out for the trail, it's really important. And I just incorporate these now into my warm-up, regardless of what I'm going to do. And so it's just become a pattern. And I allow the horse, you know, some time to get the blood flowing, to get the circulation going, get warm. And then, you know, just keeping in mind that, as you indicated, horses also are at different levels, you know, depending on their age. We have to be considerate of things, you know, such as the physical condition of the horse, as well as things like the environment, the weather, the temperature. And I just say that because I believe most of Central and Eastern United States just came out of a polar vortex a couple weeks ago. So you have a little indication of what we deal with in Canada up in the winter. But, you know, just being considerate of the temperature, because when it's very cold out here, for example, in Canada, we do a lot of stretching and just low-level riding in terms of the pace, you know, very soft riding at the walk, a lot of stopping, backing up, those kinds of things, so that it's good for the horse's mind. It engages their mind, and they're just doing some gentle work on their body because, you know, it's hard on them to come from extreme temperatures, right? And it would be no different than in the heat, right? Being, you know, sensitive to your horse's needs in terms of hot weather. So just keeping those things in mind, what I like to start with is just some really gentle bending for the horse. And if you think about, you know, riding on top of your horse, in a perfect world, we want a horse to go straight. But that doesn't always happen. In theory, that's what we would like. So when we're going forward, our horse should be between our aids, which is our leg and our hand, and we want the horse to travel forward. Now, incorporating some bend into your horse is a very, very good thing because it allows them to flex laterally, which is just some sort of sideways bend, which is great. And it encourages them to have soft, supple muscles. And it promotes balance for your horse. And then they learn to carry themselves better. And they're able to get around the corners better. So just gradually building that up. If you're starting out today, it's your first time doing this, what I would just generally do is have your horse walk straight along the rail. And then in the corners, when you go around, you are actually already bending. How about change that bend and do what we call a counterflex, which is just that the horse bends their body in the opposite shape of the arc of the corner. So, you know, you can do that just for a couple strides through the turn, let them straighten out again. And that way it allows the horse to hold their body for a short period of time in that position, get a little bit of strength, suppleness, then allows them to go back to moving forward naturally. So you can start all the way going around the whole arena doing that, and then you can go ahead on a circle on half the arena and try something like that. So I find that, you know, that's a great exercise, and you can do that at the walk, the jog or trot, lope or canter, or sometimes I call it the canter lope if I'm being pinching English and Western.
You're making me hungry. You're making me hungry. Yes. I want some cantaloupe.
That's right.
We're all about the food here, Christy. I'm okay with that.
Well, you might
well,
be hungry after
that.
Doing
I think
these
so
exercises.
Great. That's true. Yeah. Another thing which I think is so great about this is that, you know, so many people think, well, what if I don't have an arena, right? I guess I can't do exercises. So untrue. You can do them in your pasture. You can do them when you're going straight down the trail. You can counter arc your horse, counter flex your horse. Those are all things that you can do while you're, you know, out and about. It doesn't always have to be in the confines of an arena.
Oh, you're so right. And once you get the idea of what you're asking your horse to do, then exactly, you can do it anywhere, and it's really good. It, you know, you may be surprised just that people are left or right-handed more dominant on one side. Your horse at the beginning may very well be like that as well. So it sort of shows you maybe some areas that you can improve on in helping your horse, because you're going to have a more all-around horse. And if you do things like this at the beginning, when you work on things like leads at the lope or the canter, you're going to have less issues with that because your horse is going to be more balanced.
Now, you told us that, you know, about the circle work. Like, can we expand on the circle work and the serpentines and figure eights and things? I know that your background, you do a lot of reining, and I know you've also done a lot of Western horsemanship. So those out there that are doing kind of the Western world, regardless of if they're showing or they're recreational riders or both, I think the circles and the serpentines and figure eights are great. So do you want to talk a little bit about how they would set those up in their arena and, or wherever they are and how they would get those done?
Yeah, absolutely. I love to use patterns involving, you know, involving serpentines or figure eights or just them as themselves. So to break it down, if you have the opportunity to use an arena, things like visual markers are really, really great for you to help keep you in line and keep you balanced in terms of if you were making a figure eight, you can keep your circles proportionate. You could put markers out. You can use dressage letters on the walls so that you have a focal point to go to and help keep yourself as even as you can. So when I'm riding, I love the figure eight because I find it to be a really useful exercise. And you can do it at the walk, the jog, or the lope. And you can do a whole bunch of neat things. I like to use the full arena and do your traditional figure eight, which is two circles where you pass through the center, which will be termed X in terms of dressage letters, and you pass through. And if you're loping, you may or may not do a lead change because you may want to counter. Your horse on the opposite circle gives you the opportunity to allow your horse to perform a flying lead change when you want, so at will. So that's a great use of that exercise. If you break it down when I'm teaching, and I'll just relate sometimes I do this at the trot, it's great practice for riders to learn to be able to change their diagonal in the center of the arena. And you can do that traditional shape with the two round circles. You could also use the arena lengthwise, so you have skinny, almost box-shaped loops where you come through and make a figure eight, not in the traditional A to C orientation, but actually lengthwise. So does that make sense?
It does. I always tell my boys, and of course, Glenn, you were mentioning how it's hard for when Jennifer tried to teach you. Yeah, try being mommy teaching children, your own children. That's a challenge as well. Yes, whatever, mommy. I already know. Just leave me alone. All that good stuff. But when I teach them, because I have little guys that are 7 and 9, and I try to teach them that it's actually not like the figure eight you draw at school, like the number 8, it's actually a D and a mirror backwards D, like if you look in the mirror, because you want two circles connected by a straight line, because it's on that straight line is where you do those things. And I think you're absolutely right, Tara, when you mentioned the skinnier one, boy, that's a whole lot harder, because you have to really control the horse and have more bend in your body in order to get them to bend better. So that's a way to make the exercise harder, is making the arena, changing where you do it. I think that's great.
Yeah, and just that's, in terms of that.
I like that one.
Oh, yeah. You want to work out. There you go. Please let us know how it goes for you, Jennifer.
You want to hear about my failures. Thank you very much. I like that. Yeah. No, but changing it midstream to do, because we all get in the habit of, my figure eights are always the same. I'm either doing the infinity sign, which is what you call your across a diagonal type of figure eight, or you do the two circles of the same size attached type of figure eight. The D-shaped one I like. I haven't tried that on purpose in a long time. But to be able to do those, for example, for perhaps a more advanced training session, to be able to do them back-to-back, do one diagonally oriented, one round-oriented, and then one D-oriented, with that center point being the same, is going to be a real test of your ability to control your horse's direction at the beginning, and as you advance, bend, as well as direction, in a more detail, because the horses tend to go, okay, this is how I made the figure eight last time, this is how I'm going to make it again. And you're going to anticipate. So what a great exercise. Like I said, I'm writing this one down.
Oh, yeah, that's a great suggestion. Variety is, you've hit that right on the head, Jennifer. Variety is great in terms of mixing it up for your horse, because there becomes less anticipation. If you just perform the same exercise over and over in the same spot, the horse does take comfort out of that because it's repetition, but what happens is they become where they get a little of anticipation. And, you know, we've all seen that. If, for example, I'm running a reining pattern, I don't want my horse to just automatically switch leads. I want the horse to wait for me. So by doing a variety of exercises, you know, in different areas of the arena, mixing it up, then I'm sure to keep my horse's attention on me and also help have them wait for the cue from me as the rider.
Yes, I loved how you said, do not always change your lead in the middle of your figure eight. Counter bend a little bit, counter canter a little bit, and then change it. That's great.
Yeah, the other thing is, too, you know, you could stay on one circle for 2 or 3 rounds before you actually switch over to the other. Sometimes I do that just for that very reason I mentioned, so the horse doesn't anticipate what's coming or that they always are going to change every circle.
So how about if you're going to spiral, can you explain to people what that spiral shape is and how to do that?
Yeah, great question, Christy. Spiraling is very effective for your horse. It helps with balance and it sort of lets you see where your horse is at. You can do this a variety of ways. You could start on a smaller circle and gradually increase the size of your circle every round just by a little bit. I prefer to start riders doing this at the walk or the trot just so that they gain some confidence. And that they have an idea that the horse is moving in a relatively straightforward motion, but they're going to have a curve to their body. So as the rider progresses, you're going to ask them to increase the size of the circle every time. You maybe try it at the lope or the canter. You can even incorporate a little bit of some lateral exercises into that, which means the horse is going to be moving forward and sideways a little bit at the same time in order to get that. So there's going to be a little bit of crossover as the horse is going out in diameter of the circle, and the rider has to be aware of where the horse is. So each time you're going to get a little bigger, and then I have them keep going on the circle and then gradually decrease the circle and see if they can, you know, sort of keep it within the same time frame. It's really interesting to me. I'll just give you an example. A horse that's a great big thoroughbred, and then a quarter horse, they were doing the same exercise on the same circle, and the thoroughbred had the circle increased in about, I'd say, 3 circles, and the quarter horse took 11 times to get around. So just where the rider's at, the length of the stride, but they were still working with their horse, and it was really neat to see. It was absolutely wonderful.
Now, my Hackney pony would get around in one time, but he'd cut through the middle. It would be just cheating. Because that's what Hackneys do.
You'd do it in record time.
Yeah, I'd be done. Yeah. You guys would be going round circles, and I'd be done because, you know, that's what Hackneys do. Hey, we're plain running out of time here for Tara's segment. Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been fascinating. Where can people learn more about you?
Oh, well, thanks very much, Glenn. Yes, I enjoyed being here. And you can find me on www.tghorsemanship.com.
That's tghorsemanship.com is where you'll find all of Tara's information. Now, you're in Edmonton, Alberta, right?
I am, yes.
And what is the temperature there this morning?
This morning, we're just above freezing.
Oh, you're toasty. You'll be out riding in T-shirts today.
We are close to it. We actually took the blankets off the horses about a week ago, which in January is unheard of. Some horses have two blankets on, and we've been able to be blanket free now for a week, and I'm hoping to keep with that trend.
Oh, that'll end.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Our Northeast is getting hammered with a snowstorm today, so and another Arctic blast. So you're just sharing the love.
I hope it stays, because my four-year-old, my youngest son, he said to me yesterday, Mom, spring is here. Spring is coming. I said, I'm not too sure, buddy, but we'll keep hoping and praying that it will be.
Well, thank you, Tara. It's good to talk to you again.
You as well. Thank you so much, Tara, for having me on the show. Thank you. Enjoy your day.
She was great. I remember she joined you last time we talked on the Stable Scoop radio show. A lot of fun. I'm glad you had her on.
I did. Yeah, thank you very much. And I just want to mention one more thing, Glenn. You know how we were talking about visual learners. For those of you that can't really visualize that spiral or the three different types of figure eights we were talking about, they're in our composite manual of horsemanship. For anybody that wants to see that, and some of our other manuals, when you go to the CHA website, have them as well, if that's helpful to you.
Very good. Well, let's take a break for our song of the day. I thought an appropriate one for today would be Born to Ride by Marianne Kennedy. And we're going to come back. We have Teresa with us, who's going to be going a little bit on the English side with some dressage, hunter, and jumping exercises. And we're going to be doing that in a few minutes. Hang with us, everybody.
That I ever said, visions of galloping in my head, mane so and tails held high, I knew that I was born to ride. I was born to ride like a bird was born to fly. Fish gotta swim, gotta shine. Love me, love my soul. That's the way I'm gonna spend my life. 'Cause I was born to ride, born to ride. The air I breathe, the way they knew this poetry. Oh, never I grew them, and I never will. On the day I die, I'll be loving them still. 'Cause I was born to ride. Born to ride, born to ride, born on the back of a horse. Love me, love my horse. That's the way I'm gonna spend my life. I was born to ride, born to ride. I was born to ride.
Well, that was Born to Ride with Mary Ann Kennedy. You can find all of her music at maryannkennedy.com. You are listening to Horses in the Morning. We are brought to you today by Revitavet.com. You can visit them at Revitavet.com, and they have all kinds of terrific videos and explanations of exactly what their particular infrared therapy does for your horse. So check them out. I am here with Christy of the Certified Horsemanship Association, and we have Coach Jen in the producer chair as well. Well, Christy, I know that Jennifer is getting our next guest lined up here, she'll be with us here in a minute. Was there anything else you wanted to bring up about the CHA or let everybody know about?
Yeah, you know, one thing, too, that people can do, we have a YouTube channel, Glenn, and if anyone goes to our website on our homepage, you can link to it, or just do CHA Instructors is the name of our channel on YouTube, and we've got 3 to 5 minute videos that talk about all kinds of different things, such as mounting and dismounting correctly, helmet fit for those that wear their helmets, information on different types of rein holds, so your Rommel rein hold if you ride Western versus split reins versus a trainer's hold, a bunch of different things on how to deworm your horse safely with a paste wormer, all kinds of things. So if anyone is interested in those, they're all embeddable. They can embed them onto their website. They can use them in staff training if they run their own program, and we would love to make that information available to everybody.
You know, while we were playing the song, I pulled up chainstructors.com, and which also, when you look at it, you see chainstructors.com when you actually look at the name. But it's chainstructors.com, and I pulled up those around Ocala, Florida, and there are actually quite a few that were around Ocala here.
Yeah, you know. We do. We have quite a few in your area, quite a few kind of in the Pacific Northwest. We're in every state. We even have some instructors in good old Alaska out there doing their thing, and we're almost in every single province of Canada, too. So our instructors are pretty much throughout North America. We just started doing clinics down in Mexico as well, so that's been fun.
Well, that's interesting you say you have some in Alaska. We're going to have Lisa Marie Kelly on with us later in the week. I think she'll be on Friday. She's the Ice Road Trucker Girl, and she's also a Serious Horse Girl up there in Alaska. So I just confirmed with her yesterday she'll be joining us later in the week. So if you're up there in Alaska and you want to hear Lisa, who's one of your big celebrities up there in Alaska, she'll be on the show on Friday. All right, our next guest is ready.
Super. Well, I want to introduce, and it is my pleasure to introduce, Teresa Kackert. She is one of our master instructors and clinicians, and she's from Menifee, California. She has a varied background, Glenn and Jennifer. It is not just all hunter, jumper, and dressage for this girl. Oh, no. She also ran a large trail ride operation down in San Diego where she took people out on the beach for beach rides back in the day. She has done so many things, it's hard to say as far as on the back of a horse, but right now she's doing consignment horse sales as well as training and instruction. She's also a fox hunter, and she coaches and works with Pony Club kids too. So a wide variety. It's a thrill to have her on today. Hello, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Doing fine, thank you. So we just had Tara, who you know well, from Edmonton, Alberta. She says it is freezing, and now we have you down there in Southern California. So what is your temperature?
Oh, well, it's a little chilly this morning, but I think it's going to warm up to a, you know, nice balmy 85 today. That's a rough life, what can I say?
Jealous.
You should be. That is jealous weather, I will have to say. I think of everybody out in where it's colder and much more challenging to take care of your horses. And it justifies the higher taxes and everything else we have to pay here. I'm like, it's worth it when it's 85 in January.
Yes, very jealous. Well, I'll tell you, Teresa, we just had Tara on, and she was giving us a lot of simple stretches for riders, simple stretches for horses. She did a lot of talk about circle work and serpentines and things like that. So I know that you're going to get to eventually some cavaletti and ground pull and some jumping work too, but I want to start with a few more things on the flat that we weren't quite able to get to during Tara's time, because I know that you have some great ideas for this as well. Could we go ahead and start with, when you're working with your horses and your riders, what do you do as far as lateral exercises for them? Then could you explain what lateral means and how that all works?
Sure, absolutely. I also want to say, too, one of the things that I did a little research on, and I think is super important for all of our riders and students and instructors to be aware of, is experts say it takes 10,000 hours of practice for us to be able to create the neural pathways in our brain to actually be good at something. So we have that muscle memory, and we can kind of do something on autopilot.
Wait a minute. That means I have to do about 20 more years of this show before I finally get good at it.
Exactly. See, well, and here's the scary thing. I did math. I know this is a little terrifying, but most of us ride an hour a day. So if you're riding an hour a day, 5 days a week, which for some folks, that's a lot more than
that's a lot, yeah.
To ride. Now, so that would have you riding 260 hours per year. It would take you 38 years to get to the 10,000 hour mark.
Woo! Wow.
Yeah. So that tells us what we really need to do is make the work that we're doing with our horses count. So no more thinking about what you're going to have for dinner and what you have to do when you get off of your horse. You have to really be focused while you're riding your horse to make that one little hour count towards your 10,000 hour mark. So that's super important.
Well, you know, you
and Teresa and Jennifer, the only thing that I am good at then is talking, because that's probably the only thing I've done 10,000 hours for.
You know, you mentioned that and it sounds so silly, but me having severe ADD, I have a difficult time with that when I'm working with my pony and when I'm driving. I have a difficult time with it. I guess I'm not the only one.
Right. Well, we have such busy lifestyles that it's hard for us to shut everything down and really focus on the task at hand. But isn't that one of the things that if we spent more time working on that, how much better will we be at everything else we do in our day-to-day lives?
That's true. And, you know, we spend all the money on the horses in the first place. I guess the little time we do get with them, we better keep our minds with them because make it all worthwhile for your spouse's sake.
Right. Absolutely. But, let me talk a little bit about this lateral exercises that we do because this is super important. And lateral exercises are things that we're going to do that have our horse moving in a general sideways direction. And the reason why that is so important is it engages our whole horse, and it's kind of, I equate leg yields and some of our lateral work to horsey yoga. So what it does is it develops strength in our horse's body as well as stretching a lot of their muscles simultaneously. So when we start to do all that and we get them better balanced, then they're able to move better and respond better off our legs and our natural aids. And even our artificial aids, we need to use a little spur or something with them. But I would have to say, unequivocally, one of my favorite lateral exercises is a leg yield. So basically, for anybody who's not sure what a leg yield is, basically your horse is going to be moving forwards, and their head is going to be bent in the direction that they're traveling. So if you're going forwards and you want to move your horse to the right, then their head and neck and the general bend of their body is going to be to the right. So they're on fire, it's going to be opposite the way they're going. So if they're moving forward, then their head and neck and their body is going to be bent to the left while you're moving right. And the reason why that's so important is because it creates that diagonal balance. But the horses also have to be able to be balanced and move in that direction simultaneously diagonally and engage that inside hind leg to step underneath themselves a little bit. And that's super important because you can leg yield your horse in and out on a circle. You can keep them round and balanced and coming through so that they're able to develop that strength forward and sideways in order to be stronger horses in general.
So could you explain something to me then, Teresa? So if I'm going down just in my arena and I want a leg yield, where do I come off the rail? Where do I go back on? Should I go on the rail first or off first? What is an exercise maybe you can explain to us so that I can kind of picture that?
Absolutely. Well, one of the easiest exercises to do is to have your horse going on a circle and to kind of leg yield in and out of that circle, spiraling in and spiraling out, so that your horse is continually working both sides of their body and using themselves in a way that's going to be most efficient for building that muscle. So let's say you're on a 20-meter circle and you already have the bend in your horse's body. Well, you can then ask them to leg yield out of that circle by applying your inside leg and opening your outside rein. They already have less bend, so it's pretty easy for them. And they're going to kind of, every step they take is going to take them farther away from the center of that circle. And they're going to be working that inside left hind leg coming through to that outside right shoulder. And that's going to build that diagonal straightness through them. Then once you have them out away from the circle a little bit, you can kind of create a little bit of outside bend and kind of leg yield them back into the circle. So you're kind of working a little bit on what could progress into a little bit of counter canter work, a little bit of counter bend in your horse as you leg yield them back into the center of that circle. So circles are really important. It's an easy way because you already have the bend established when you begin that spiral out. If you do decide to go down the long side, usually what I'll have folks do is turn down the long side on the quarter line. So let's say if you take your arena and you divide it into four equal portions, the middle part of your arena would be the center line. And you just go over one more line, one more portion, and that would be your quarter line. So you can turn down your quarter line. You're going to have your horse slightly bent to the inside of the arena. And then you're just going to ask them to move out to the arena railing from your inside leg. And the neat thing about that is getting closer to the rail kind of tells you that you're moving in the general correct direction. Now, most horses are going to want to lead with their outside shoulder. So as they turn down that quarter line and start to go to the rail, they're kind of going to want to lean to their outside shoulder and get closer to the rail that way. So it's important to keep a little feel of your inside rein so that your horse moves laterally or sideways over as a unit and not kind of at an angle. So we want them moving straight through the rail, not angled through their body.
Yeah, that makes sense, Teresa. And then I have another question for you. If I'm going to do some work like walk, trot, canter, should I just get in the arena and just walk for 5 minutes and then trot all in the same direction for 5 minutes and then canter all in the same direction? Or should I do more transitional work, and what does that look like?
Absolutely. Transitions are super important. And there's a lot of different ways that you can do your transition. So a transition is either going to be speeding up or slowing down. So a transition would be going from the walk to the trot, from the trot to the canter, and then vice versa. So you can do transitional work within changing the speed of your gait, so walk, trot, canter. Or another way that you can do your transitions is you can, let's say, for example, your horse is in working trot or a medium trot. You can do within the same gait transition. So you can say, I'm a medium trot, now I'm going to move up to an extended trot. Now I'm going to come back to medium trot. Now I'm going to come to a more collected trot where the horses are taking a smaller step. And remember, a lot of us as riders aren't going to get true collection or true extension from our horses right away, as it would be just defined in a dressage type term. But we can get a shortening of the step or a lengthening of the step, and that's a great place to start. So I like to do a lot of in-gait transitions. So you can even start it at the walk, and you can do this on the trail also. So you can say, I'm going to be in a regular walk gait, medium walk. Now I'm going to ask my horse to extend the walk. Oh, here comes something that's a little trappy that we need to kind of work around, something in the trail. I want to collect the walk to take a smaller step so that we can negotiate this obstacle more safely. So it's really important when you're riding your horse, either on the trail or in the arena, you want to keep your horse engaged and a working partner with you. And the best way to do that is not to ride more than 3 or 4 strides with doing what you're doing now. So you want to kind of change it up every 3 or 4 strides. That might mean lengthening. That might mean shortening, doing those transitions. It might mean changing your bend, adding a couple of steps of lateral work or leg yield, halting, doing a turn on the forehand or a turn on the haunches. So if you're constantly moving and mixing up what you're doing with your horse, you're going to keep them dialed in as a partner. And as you're changing it up, they never really know what's coming next. So they have to stay mentally focused also to know what they have to do so they can arrange their body in order to perform for you. And like back to our 10,000 hours, it keeps us from thinking about picking up the kids after school or the dry cleaning, because we're having to come up with what we're going to do next to help our horse be a good, willing partner.
That's true. You know what, though? Sometimes I just like, you know, riding my horse down the trail and turning off my brain. It is so, you're absolutely right about that. You've got to have a moment in your busy life to turn off your brain. So sometimes I'm just going to walk on a loose rein and not do any exercises at all. How about you, Glenn?
That describes 99% of my day. A loose rein and nothing upstairs.
That's right. Makes life a little easier.
I think that's important for the horses, too, because it can't all be work. You know, you got to have a little fun in there and let them just relax and work their body. And then when you do go to work, they're so much more ready to be a willing partner with you.
I will tell you this, though. You do have to pay a little bit more attention when you have a... I think that's, you know, with the ponies, I've always had ponies or draft horses. I've always had one or the other. And with driving ponies, you do have to pay more attention. You can't daydream as much. And I think maybe that's why I like them, is because they're a little bit more challenging, because you never know what they're going to do, especially the Hackney ponies. So, maybe that's why I like them.
I think that's wonderful. You know, it is true, because you never do know. That's why, you know, it's really fun to go ride on a windy day. You never know what's going to happen.
It's like NASCAR every moment.
You never know what's going to happen just leading his pony to the paddock. What do you mean?
What I'd like to do now, Teresa, I'd love to talk about ground poles and cavalettis and the difference between those two, and how this is not just for people who want to jump. You know, all of us, even when we go on the trail, there might be a log in the way, right? There might be a fallen tree. There might be some other things. We probably don't want our horse to leap over the creek or leap over the ditch, but you never know, right? There might be a time when we've got to do that. So could you explain the difference between those two obstacles and maybe some ways to utilize them?
Absolutely. So basically, ground poles are going to be any kind of pole that's laying on the ground. And a lot of times people who are using ground poles are using some sort of jump pole, which is about 10 to 12 feet long, and about 3.5 to 4 inches in diameter, and something that you could put into standards and use as a jump also. Now, cavaletti are a little bit different. They can have that same pole in there, but they're attached so that they can be raised, and a lot of them will have three settings. You'll see them with the little X's on the ends, and so you can have them so that they're just barely off the ground, supported by their little X support on the end of the pole, or you can roll them over, and they'll be about 6 inches, or you can roll them again, and then they'll usually be 12 to 18 inches, depending upon how tall you make your support on the end that you have them attached to. And the great thing about cavaletti work is it gets your horse to, again, think, use their mind, and engage their hind end. And the neat thing about it is it gets them to think for themselves. As long as you get your horse going into the cavaletti or the ground poles, if they're straight and they have an even tempo and rhythm to their strides, picking up their feet and organizing it is their job. So as a rider, it's a little liberating because you can say, okay, I'm at the same rhythm. I have the correct placement and perpendicular to the center of the pole. Now it's your job to kind of carry us through. And they really have to think. It's a good idea when you start to start with just one pole on the ground. That way it gives them the opportunity to kind of sort it out. And depending upon your horse's stride length, you can have your trot poles set anywhere from 4 feet to 4 feet, 6 inches apart. And sometimes with our bigger warm bloods or horses that have a long stride, you can even set them 4'9", but that would be pretty far. So our average is between 4 foot and 4'6". And you can progressively add these poles or cavaletti, and your horse is having to have that regular rhythmic stride that's the same size step every time. And that's huge for developing consistency in your horse's way of going. And the neat thing is you can have 3 or 4 ground poles on the ground and then have a raised cavaletti at the end. So they're having to really focus and pick up their feet to get over that 6 inches or 18 inches or whatever your height of your raised cavaletti is at the end of your line. So they're an incredible tool for developing that mental sharpness in your horse and getting them to pay attention. And as a rider, your job is just going to be to stay balanced and consistent so that they can do their job.
Now, Teresa, can you walk, trot, and canter these?
Well, depending upon the placement. So you could, your trot poles are going to be set up 4 foot to 4 foot, 6 inches. Now, if you want to do cantering poles, you certainly can. And you can canter ground poles, or you can canter cavaletti also. And your average placement for a canter pole will be 9 feet apart. Of course, horses that have smaller strides, you're going to set it a different distance. But the average canter pole is going to be about 9 feet. Sometimes you might stretch it out to 10 feet if you have that longer strided horse. But it's great. I mean, as hunter-jumper riders, we're always trying to develop our eye and find that perfect spot to the fence. And one of the ways is excellent at doing that is with canter poles. And another really fun exercise that you can do is you can take two ground poles or cavalletti and you can place them 66 feet apart. And so that's an average, for average 12-foot strided horse, that's 5 strides, really easy. So they'll canter through there, a nice 5 strides. Well, now you can say, okay, I want to shorten your stride, and I want to do this in 6 or 7 strides. Well, now I want to lengthen your stride, and I want to ride through this in 4 strides. So it gives you that accordion flexibility in your horse's stride to be able to add and to be able to lengthen their stride as well as have a baseline for a normal stride. So now when you get on course, you're like, oh boy, I really need to make a change. You and your horse can do that together. And it helps develop that rider's eye also.
That in-gate transition work that you were talking about earlier, but with poles on the ground to help you visually see and the horse. I like that.
Exactly. We can up the ante a little bit.
That's really good. So now let's take it that next step. So let's say that I want to go ahead now, and I've done my ground poles, and I've done my cavalettis, and now it's time to do a little cross rail, or maybe get to the point where I'm going to start doing some small verticals. How do I set up a course in my arena or my field or wherever I have an opportunity to ride that will be safe for my horse and will make sense to him stride-wise?
Absolutely. Well, one of the first things that you want to think about is the footing is everything. If you're, especially if you're out in the field, you need to make sure that you have nice level footing for your horse, especially if they're getting started and they're not going to jump and land in a rabbit hole or a squirrel hole or something like that. But if you visit the CHA website, there are videos on there, and I did a video this fall about how to actually walk your line of fences, and it demonstrates on how exactly to measure out your footsteps to measure between the fences to get that correct distance so that you can have it set appropriately to make it easy for your horse. And that's really important because if we're setting fences on the half stride, because our average horse's step or length of stride is going to be 12 feet for an average horse. If things are set 12 and a half feet or at the wrong stride distance, it's going to be really awkward for your horse. You're never going to develop that nice regular rhythm. So a nice distance for a lot of horses, if you're trying to set, oh gosh, let's say your 4-stride line for your horse, then you would want the jumps set 50 feet apart for your average 12-foot stride length of your horse. And the biggest reason for that is, remember, you know, people would say, well, 60 feet, shouldn't that be 5 strides? We just did that on the ground as 5 strides. But now that our horse is actually going to be airborne, part of their stride is going to be in the air or their bascule over the fence. And it sounds a little vague to understand, and that's where the video comes in really handy because we demonstrate and spell all that out for you. But as you're counting your line of fences, you're going to have 6 feet on the landing side of your horses. From 6 feet from the fence is where they're going to land. And then they're going to take off to the next fence 6 feet away from the actual fence itself. So 6 plus 6 is 12. That's where a 60-foot distance actually gives you that 4-stride length.
Too much math.
Yeah. I know. It's a lot of math, isn't it?
Hey guys, we're gonna have to call it a day here because we are running out of time. Teresa, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Where can people find you? What's your website?
Well, our website, it's allamericanhorses.org. We have information there. And I also really encourage people to take a look at the CHA website because there's tons and tons of great information. We have lots of videos online there. And then they'll give people the opportunity to really make those 10,000 hours of practice count.
Okay, great. I'm still counting the number of days I have left till I get good.
Thanks for having me on the show today. It was great.
Thanks, Teresa.
Working with you guys. All right, you guys have an awesome day.
You know, that's kind of a depressing figure when you think about it. 10,000 hours is a long time.
Oh, boy. I'm just sitting here thinking, oh, I got a lot of work to do.
Yes, exactly. Now, not only do I have 10,000 hours to do, I actually have to pay attention while I'm doing it. That's just going to be impossible.
I know.
Forget it.
Up the ante for us.
I know. Jeez. taking all the fun out of it. No, I'm just kidding. But Teresa was terrific. Thank you so much for having her on. And why don't you give out the website again and where people can find out more about the CHA?
Absolutely. You can find an instructor near you if you want to go and do some of these exercises and things with someone watching you, if you're to that point in your riding that you would like that, or ride a school horse and learn how to do them first on a school horse and then apply it to a horse of your own in the future at www.chainstructors.com. Or to find out more about our certification clinics and our conferences and the education that we provide on our videos and what have you, that is CHA and then hyphen AHSE.org.
And I can never remember that, so I just search for Certified Horsemanship Association. It comes up at the top. So, yeah, if you can't remember.
Do you know what happened, Glenn?
Yeah.
CHA with Canadian Hockey Association, CHA with Colorado Health Association. So, unfortunately, yes, we had to go with an older name that we had back in the past, which was American Horsemanship and Safety and Education. That was kind of one of our mantras back
then. Oh, I would have never remembered that either. Yeah, CHA is much better. Yes.
much better. I agree.
Much better. Well, you know, I wanted to remind everybody a couple of show notes here. Tomorrow morning, we will have our last Wheel of Trivia here on the Horses in the Morning show, our last EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia.
Not really the last one.
Well,
we're having a new and improved version coming up.
Well, we're having a new game altogether coming up. So it is the last Wheel of Trivia that we're going to be doing it the way we're doing it. So if you want to get your last shot in, then join us tomorrow morning at 9:05 a.m. Give us a call at 347-637-3238. We would love to have any of the CHA listeners that are joining us for the first time today join in. It's a simple game. You call in, you get in line, and we ask you an equine trivia question. And if you get it correct, I spin the wheel of prizes we have here. Some days we give away over $500 worth of prizes. So I think we figured it out last year. We gave away over $6,000 in prizes last year here on the show.
Wow.
Yeah, so we give away a lot of stuff. So you want to join us for that? Yeah, and you learn things. That's right. You do learn stuff too. And then next week, we're going to tell you what our new exciting idea is for a new game that we're going to be playing that we'll think you'll enjoy as well. And then, of course, we'll be back, as always, on Friday with Really Bad Ads. We have that coming up on Friday, everybody's favorite time of the week. Remember that you always listen to the CHA episode, the training episode of Horses in the Morning. It's going to be the third Tuesday of every month, and we'll remind you on our Facebook page. Just hop on over to Horses in the Morning on Facebook or Certified Horsemanship Association on Facebook. And the easiest way to listen to our show is through our app. Just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network. You'll find all 11 of our shows on there. It's easy to stream them or just download them to your phone and listen to them anytime you want to. We have thousands of people now doing that from all over the world, but that probably is the best way to do it. What did I forget? Did I forget anything, Christy?
I don't think so, Glenn. I think it was a wonderful first show. I'm so pleased that Tara and Teresa were able to join us, and I'm looking forward to doing this every month.
Yes, me too. I think it was terrific. Thank you so much, Christy. You were great. Let's give Christy a round of applause. It's kind of nerve-wracking to do your first show, especially when it's there. You go. Especially when it's live, it's kind of nerve-wracking. So I understand, but you did a great job. Thank you for joining us.
I enjoyed it absolutely. Thank you for having us, and we're thrilled to do it this whole entire year.
Very good. We'll see you again next month, Christy. We'll see everybody else here tomorrow morning on Horses in the Morning. Wear your helmets. Be safe.